from SLB Radio in Pittsburgh, Youth Express, the nation's first 24/7 radio station devoted to youth writing, music, and conversation.
I don't know why some people look down on people who either give up on college or never go in the first place.
There are people that just hate you because of your race or ethnicity, but we are definitely making progress.
She's hungry for everything, the life within, trying to find her way around again. Looking and searching is what she's doing.
So I followed my brother down to the riverbank, and we donned our skates. While Lev hurried, I tarried. While Lev trudged through the slush, I caught a flake on my tongue.
My parents are from Bhutan. They migrated to Nepal, and I born there, and I moved here in the US. So it's a long journey to get here.
Today, original poetry and a conversation between a father and a son about growing up. But first, kids living in Rankin talk about some of the good and not so good things in their neighborhood.
My name is Tom, and I'm 13, and we're going to be talking about life. I'm from Rankin. It's a lovely place, but, like, growing up, it's just dangerous out here because so many kids out here dying, and I feel like I'm a big brother to some of the younger people I'll be with.
My name is Nate, and I am 10 years old, and I agree with Tom. People out here are just being them, and they aren't even doing anything, and they end up dying over something that is very stupid.
Too many kids out here doing drugs, dying too early, shooting. If that was me personally, I would say I need to put this stuff down.
My name is Malik. I'm 12. There's a lot of shooting, people doing drugs, and crimes out here.
My name is Destiny. I'm 11 years old, and I'm from Rankin. And I think Rankin is a good place, but then it's not at the same time because it's kind of dangerous out here. And like Tom said, it's like so scary for you to like walk. And some things that people do, like when they hear shooting or something, they'll leave. But I mean, when it happens, people run and go in their house or the nearest person who they know inside their house, like if they're closer. It's kind of dangerous.
My name is DJ, and I'm 9 years old, and I'm from the hill. Rankin is just not a nice place to be. There's so many young kids. Just like Tom said, people's doing drugs and all of this stuff, and it's not good. 2 years ago, it was me, my mom, and my sister. We were walking to go to, like, a station, and then they just start shooting and stuff. And then that's when we ran back down, all the way, like, down this hill.
I'm Damer, and I'm 11 and a half years old. And I don't think people should be dying, because I know people want to live long lives. It's not about just dying. It's about surviving. Even though people might be still dead, they have a long life to live up in heaven.
Well, we can stop these things by telling the people that's doing this stuff, put down the drugs, and just help out. It's not even about surviving. It's about caring and loving one another, bringing each other up, and stop bringing each other down.
When I have any trouble or something, I look to my mom and my dad because they tell me the right things to do.
Well, every time I, like, get in trouble and stuff, I would turn to my cousin, but he's just, like, had recently passed. I would, like, turn to him. He's a good role model towards, like, to me because he's, like, his own person. He don't hang with anyone for real, and my mom does the same thing, and they out here trying to, like, well, my mom's out here trying to, like, make it through. Like, she's trying to make it out here because it is getting real rough and tough around here. So I learned from them. Being, like, my age is, like, scary because people that does this stuff is always outside. They're scattered any type of time, and you don't know what's going on.
When me and my friends were playing kickball, we had this weird feeling of when we heard firecrackers, but actually it was gunshots. It was really close to us. So we had to run away.
I think we do need more, like, leaders and no followers, because when I was growing up, I had experience. I was one of those followers, and I'm, like, not proud of it because I was like, wow, looking back, I was like, wow. I could have been one of those leaders and leading people to success and not to fail. I used to always cuss, fight. I didn't care about anyone. Like, the only people I cared about was my family. I didn't care about my friends. I didn't care about anybody. I'll be putting my mom through the stress and, like, looking at her, like, thinking everything was just cool and she's just going through it. So, yeah.
I felt good about being a Rankin because I got a lot of friends and they make me laugh every day, like Tom, Boogie, and Destiny, DJ, Nate, Damer.
Well, I like being in Hoggins Village, just being with my parents.
I like being in Rankin because there's a lot of things to do down here. I have a lot of friends down here. Rankin is good. It's okay.
There's a lot of people to play with and stuff, and I have, like, a lot of friends, and I have a little sister, and she cares very much about me. If I could change one thing about Rankin, it would be the shooting and the drugs.
If I can change one thing about Rankin, is the shooting.
If I could change one thing about Rankin, it would be little kids getting killed because I always, like, look at my brothers and sisters and my little baby sister. I got to protect them because there's a lot of shooting.
If I can change one thing about Rankin, it would be all the drama, like the shooting, selling dope, fighting.
Stop the violence!
Now, Roshi Shing shares an original poem called Again.
1. Innocence. The first time it happened, I was 10. Almost 10 and a quarter, I like to protest. Numbers are such a big deal when you're young. It was near the end of the day when they herded us into the auditorium, the sound of children chattering, a fluid undercurrent of murmurs in the stale stillness. I thought that there was an assembly, beaming at the chance to miss class. Then I saw my teacher's face. We sat stock still for hours. I didn't understand why. The teachers huddled together, speaking in that low tone adults have perfected to not worry children. It doesn't work. It wasn't until later that day, in the solid walls of home, that I learned my little brother, of flesh and blood and hair pulling and bright peals of laughter when I hug him, had been a few buildings away from being yet another statistic. His daycare was near the shooter's path. 50-some toddlers are no match for the crushing bite of a bullet. 2. Apathy. I don't remember the next 2 or 3 or 10 cases. They weren't near me, and I was much too absorbed with quadratics and taxonomy and salvaging friendships that were irreparably shattered into thousands of shiny, jagged shards that ripped my preteen heart to notice. Besides, I didn't care much for the news then. 3. Understanding. I was at a swim meet the next time, ready to hit the water and just go, bracing for the icy blow of impact, the flood of sharp chlorine, and the intense liberation of single-mindedness. When I got out, the team was huddled around a phone. I was old enough then to understand, 20 children gone in an instant, my brother's age. But it's almost Christmas, I remember thinking, watching the president cry. 4. Deluge. I don't bother remembering specific instances today. 315 shot daily, 93 fatally. I thought that a new state would mean escape from these stories, but it is the same sorry politicians that can do nothing but give the same thoughts and prayers while ignoring the same red flags and making the same empty promises, while the same organizations and people stir up the same furor to prevent action until the same shootings happen again and again in a bloody pattern. This violence is infused in our very blood, a macabre legacy we cannot or will not stray from. News alert after news alert pops up on my phone, a ding much too cheery for what it is associated with, accompanied by that familiar sinking feeling, stomach tense awaiting the blow of knowledge that I can't tear my eyes away from. 5,661 dead this year, 750 more than the last time I checked 2 weeks ago. 23 school shootings in 20 weeks. Those numbers don't mean much anymore. In any other circumstance, it would be an epidemic, investigations abounding to stem the red flood of dots covering the map, one for every shooting. In some places, you can hardly see beneath the red. 2 of the deadliest American mass shootings were in the span of 35 days, but nothing. Most of them aren't even headlines anymore. We've accepted it as normal and can only hope it'll never happen to us. Interlude. My physics teacher tells me objects with greater velocity are more dangerous, even with less mass. A tiny bullet can therefore disintegrate bone with lethal disregard for precision, tearing apart a body with the ease of shredding paper and none of the finesse. A bullet through the liver turns it into a jello mold dropped on the floor. 5. Fury. And so we prepare for our monthly intruder drills and evacuations at lectures and at school and at theaters, teaching children to play dead before they are taught to play music, planning escape routes and hoping you won't have to use them, stealing for the discordant melody of prayers, screams, gunshots, pleas, and wails. If death had a sound, this is surely what it would be. With the knowledge that 7 kids a day will have their bodies torn apart beyond repair by a shred of metal, 7 families a day left with a gaping hole, because no place is safe anymore. But this is the price of freedom, if they are to be believed. This is life in a nation with 89 guns per 100 people, and daily shootings that no other high-income countries face. See no evil, hear no evil, the evil must not exist, it will resolve itself alone, it must. But we are Generation Z of technology and inferences and cold logic, taught to eliminate confounding variables, to draw conclusions from data and passages and hard evidence. Tell me, what other conclusion can I make? And so it happens, this endless cycle, a shooting, call for stricter gun laws, a search for motives, or are they excuses? Mentally ill lone wolf or domestic? No. Foreign, un-American, because domestic means home and safety, terrorist. Raise hopes, maybe this will unite us again, maybe there will finally be change, when 97% of Americans support universal background checks, but there are still none. Don't politicize this tragedy, now isn't the time, when I thought that we should stop being politically correct. And then the fear of don't come for our guns, these weapons of mass destruction in the hands of fallible humans. There are good people, but humans make mistakes, and those few bad apples can kill hundreds. And at the end of the day, the numbers of the dead still grow, and the dead are still dead. It's the right's fault, or the left's fault, or the NRA's fault, or Islam's fault, or men's fault. Maybe it never happened in the first place, they scream furiously as bodies grow cold. But no, never forget, they tell us. Always remember this litany of names that were once people with lives and loves and now just memories to memorials to human potential as the list grows unending. Can you remember all of them? All booms must eventually bust, right? Loosen gun laws and regulations, gun sales spike. If one way doesn't work, perhaps someday, one day we'll try the opposite. Repeat. 6, resignation or hope. Maybe the children will have a solution.
On our last segment, Robert and his son, Jaden, compare their childhood experiences in school and at home.
My dad, Robert Nelson, went to high school in late 1980s. Today, I'm going to be interviewing him to get his perspective on growing up as an African-American in southwestern Pennsylvania. When listening to the following piece, it is important to know that my dad started his academic career at Perry High School in the city of Pittsburgh before finishing at a much more suburban Trinity High School in Washington County, which is a pretty stark contrast. Without further ado, here's my conversation with my father, Robert Nelson.
How would you compare school life and the way teachers treated you growing up as a kid?
I don't think that as far as the teachers, that is that much different. I mean, teachers did treat us fair and everything. I had good teachers growing up, so I can't really say that I feel like the teachers treated us different.
What was it like finding a job for you or your parents growing up?
I feel like it's the same. I hate to say it, but I just feel like there's a certain privilege that other races have to where getting jobs are easier. Sometimes I just feel like for other races, it's just a phone call or just connections. I think that's the same then as it is now.
How was dating and dating relationships growing up as a kid?
No, that was completely different. I mean, when I was in school, like when I was at Trinity, for a black guy to date white girls, it didn't happen. For girls to cross that line and say, hey, I'm going to go date the black guys or talk to the black guys, it was like it would be a big shock to their friends, and they would have to hear about it when they went back to their friends. And I just feel like things are in a much better place as far as that goes. Like the music was different. Our music back then was more conscious. So we had groups like Public Enemy, KRS-One, and things like that. So today's music is more fun. It's all races who enjoy the music. Like with you and your school, I mean, I just don't feel like there's a big issue for a black kid dating a white girl or things like that. I mean, it still does go on in schools, but it's nowhere near what it was when I was growing up.
How were friend groups and like different friend divisions as far as race growing up?
Well, when I was at Trinity, like I say, once again, the music and everything just made things a lot different. So my group of friends, we stayed real tight. It was only a handful of black kids in Trinity, and the divide was a lot bigger. You could see it. You could feel it. It was nothing for a kid to call you out of your name, and then it would be us versus that group. So today, I don't feel like it's like that at all. I mean, it's like I say, in some schools it is, but in most it's not, I feel like.
All right, most kids today use electronics for fun. What activities did you and your friends do back in the day?
Mainly sports. It was always sports. I mean, we would play basketball, football, and everything all in one day. So we played sports all the time. It wasn't sitting at home playing video games or being on your phone. Like, we would come from football practice, go home, play basketball. During football season, we still always played basketball. It seems like today, each sport demands so much. So a kid playing football might not even touch a basketball during football season. So it was always sports activities and just going outside a lot.
How would you compare Perry, a city school, compared to Trinity?
It was like night and day. When I was at Perry, it was only a handful of white kids at Perry, and they were mainly in VOTEC, or the ROTC military program. So it was night and day. When I went to Trinity and transferred to Trinity, it was only a handful of black kids. So when I walked into the school, it was a complete shock for me coming from Perry. I was living in Greenway at the time, and it was just night and day.
Overall, how would you say equality has changed from like a positive or negative?
Definitely a positive, but I still don't feel like the opportunities were always there. I feel like with social media and things like that, that kids get to see outside of their neighborhoods more, and it just makes them more aware that there's a bigger world out there, better things to do, and bigger opportunities. But I still feel like the same opportunities were there.
Last question. As an African-American dad, what advice would you give to a young African-American growing up in today's world?
Just take advantage of your opportunities. You really don't have to make excuses. Work hard. Take advantage of getting a good education. And just strive for greatness. But also be aware that racism still exists. And be aware that you do sort of have to walk a fine line. And things like being profiled, stereotyped, and things like that does exist. So you can't be blind to those things.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Youth Express. Youth Express is made possible with support from the Henry L. Hillman Foundation, the Pittsburgh Penguins Foundation, and the 33 Foundation, and was produced by SLB Radio Productions. Learn more at youthexpress.org.